Poetry is language saving us from being right. Poetry is interdimensional deadpan. Poetry is language scaling to the intimate moment. Poetry is nothing like a poem about art. Poetry is language learning to mean every crazed word. Poetry is a tongue bath on the path of deconditioning. Poetry is a deconditioning agent working for goddess knows who. Poetry is a cover-up. Poetry is made at the edge of running language. Poetry is getting out of the way of inexperienced primordial charge. Poetry is its level of self-selection. Poetry is overhearing at the speed of sound, late, yet getting into step at zero point. Poetry is consciousness laid tongue bare. Poetry is godly trouble. Poetry is in question. Poetry is how life is lived in the neighborhood, ours.
Good evening, everyone. You are in tune to Poet Radio here on WGXC. My name is Chris, host of the program. This is the January 2022 edition. And with me for the second time on the program tonight is George Quasha. George Quasha of Barrytown, New York. George and I are working on a large-scale recording project, attempting to record all of his poems, a series of poems known as Preverbs, and we've been working on this since 2017, and it's continued up until this very day. We are in George's studio in Barrytown right now, recording this for radio. Well, there's many things that we could be talking about, but one of the first things I wanted to speak with George about is I have a very strong sense that when I've been getting to know these preverbs over time, and the last time George was on the program, he read some preverbs, we talked about it, build a context for them, but the more I hear them, the more I discover that listening to the preverbs is a very different experience to reading on the page. So I thought I would go to George and ask him what his impressions of the differences between hearing a poem, hearing poetry, and reading poetry are.
Yeah, well, I think, in general, people think that hearing poetry is a necessary part of the experience of poetry. I think that's probably true by and large, but certainly not universally true. For instance, hearing difficult poems can be a difficult experience, or it can be a partial experience. In my case, I think it's more like it's one side of the experience that's possible. Difficult poetry, and I think mine is usually looked at that way, I think once you get the hang of the way it works, it's not as difficult as it initially seems, because it's got its own way of constructing the experience of meaning in language. And one experience is the experience of hearing it. And people seem to find that hearing them helps them with the poems. They get into the preverbs that way. And I found that very interesting, because actually, initially, I thought that preverbs couldn't be read because they have the potential for multiple readings. Lines have that potential, and the whole point is for me to foreground reader option, that the reader's in control. We generally think that we have to struggle to understand the author's intent, and to learn what the poem means. So interpretation can be very intimidating. And I really am against that whole aspect of the way poetry is taught and the way it's thought of in our world, that somehow the reader has to dance to the tune of the poet in some kind of complete and unvarying way, or that interpretation is the real story. So I foreground reader option, that the reader constructs the meaning of the poem. And I think that's possibly kind of one thing that's different about my work, is that it emphasizes that point so strongly, that I think that the readers are not generally prepared to make that kind of choice right off the bat. They need to learn the voice of the poet. And I often say that learning a poet's work is like learning a foreign language. Mm. You really have to learn their language. You have to learn how to be at ease within their language and not be under some kind of, obligation to understand it in a certain way. So it turns out that giving people that option initially puts a burden on them. They're not used to having that degree of option in how a poem means. So hearing the poem gives one reading that seems to be immediately real language. I'm really understanding something, or I'm coming close to understanding something, or at least I'm registering this as something said by another human being. If you then read that poem again on the page, you'll see that was one option. I can only read it one way when I'm reading it. Initially, I thought that preverbs couldn't be read publicly, because how do you represent multiple meanings? Each time that I read a line, I prejudice the reading in a certain direction. And I myself am not satisfied by that one reading. But it turns out one reading is all you're going to get when you read a line anyway.
Of course. Yeah.
So that makes it kind of a real experience. Mm. And so I think that hearing the poem is very, very important. It turns out, against my expectations, what I originally thought would be the case. 17, getting ahead of another, you get ahead of yourself first. There's neither truth nor merit in your good behavior. So says the sign over the door too. How say in your language, hell? We say brightness. Even untold tales are only as true as always occurring. I'm slow learning to read, not understanding, but feeling the river run through. Everything covertly asks to be named for what it is to be. A given line is endless in its need for correction and absolute in incorrectibility. Knowingly, it sacrifices knowing. Who am I to tell it what to say? Reading for another is self-reading. Automobiles dream of riders left to themselves. Over-gendering is nature's way, where nothing's left to say per se. Carrying your tomb on your back is overkill. No need for the high dive to taunt the deeps. Knowing biblically is a wide portal, uncannily easy to miss. Politics is too correct to be true, and clearly singular. Anything stranger than truth is fictionistic. Poetry is the last-ditch forum for the unspeakable. Trials cannot afford to be fair. This cannot be said to be true, only truly.
One thing would be interesting to do is to, you know, collect different readings of the same poem and to compare them with one another. If you know what I'm saying, because like you perhaps read some of these pre-verbs at a poetry reading, and then reading them in a studio would be a different experience altogether to hear.
Yeah, to hear.
Right. Yeah. There was a line that I heard you read today that I thought was pretty good. It's one of the things you're talking about is linearity, in a way, and there's beginning, middle, and end, but not in that order, never for long, you know, is a sort of idea. Maybe not exactly applies to the pre-verbs, but it does have,
well, actually,
you know, some resonance.
Yeah, I think that actually is a good example, actually, because that line is kind of commenting in a half-joking way on this phenomenon that every line has a beginning, middle, and end automatically. But because you're kind of sometimes in the reading experience asked to look back over the line to see if you got it right, your equivocation in reading the line is actually a reflection of the structure of the line, that the line asks for a certain creative equivocation, whereas normally the equivocation would be looked at as kind of, I didn't quite get it, am I reading this wrong, or is it something else that I'm not seeing? So I think that's a, you know, interesting way of thinking about the poem, that it requires you to reconstruct the very sequence of beginning, middle, and end. 12. The Tantra of Holding Your Horses. If this is still the fall, we're listening all the way down. Like Jerusalem, we come and go. Poetry is a youthful thing, an age invariable. Surrender signs in free-floating pronouns. Bloodhound nouns. No dancing with the same feet. Music is far. Welcome to where any word finds its pronominal future. Epics getting personal and stretching discretion. I just saw you in my movie, or me in yours, so double is my daily. Voice is learning to cast itself upon the watery waving. Signs of the times signing. It's very personal, says her impersona. Completely convincing. True poetic breakthrough feels like going insane, scaled syntactic. Time speeds, but there's hope and dimension, overlays, cross spiraling. There's beginning, middle, and end, but not in that order, and never for long. The further pronominalization of personality in these talky times is a sign. Reading the signs is singing the blues. No time to lose, no time to lose, no time. We're adrift and overbeat. No names need apply.
But it's funny that sometimes, you know, I'm listening to you read, but I'm also following along in the book, and sometimes I have the experience of, how's he going to get to the rest of this line? And I think that when you're reading it, and one of the things I've learned in working with you on the pre-verbs project is, you know, the improvisatory nature of it, the in-the-moment nature of it, the fact that, you know, every line contains its own poetics. You go back to a blank slate after every line.
Yeah.
So you don't rehearse in a conventional way, like the same poem. The poem is not delivered the same way every single time as you might.
No, even for myself, there's no right way of reading it, but there are wrong ways of reading it.
Right.
So somehow I have to get it, one of the right ways of reading it, at least when I'm doing it. Yeah, I think that the poem is surprising to me, too, And very often when I'm rereading my own work, which is one of the things about reading it on the page, I actually see ways of reading it that I hadn't thought of originally. It has a kind of mind of its own, a kind of life of its own. And I like to think of it that way. I like to think of the poem as a person almost. It has a separate identity from mine, and it's talking to me and actually teaching me. I actually have to study it sometimes. I return to my work as a kind of study in what it is that it's possible to say.
Well, that brings me to another line, which I just heard you read a few minutes ago, which is, on the other hand, I am not the authority on this page.
27, hermeneutical mappings. I write nostalgically under the sign of the four. Now back to zero. I tell you, authorship is the damnedest thing, and nautical. My inner personae may join facing outward in consensual surround. Poetry teaches me I'm an experimental person. Alternate destinies appear to gather at the horizon. My inner beings have been circling the wagons again. Metastatic gossip may be reaching unto trees. Primary therapeutics teaches writing on air. Poem harvests running insight regardless of creed or diagnosis. Between knowings caught in unreadable script and scripting are catching. Ancient teachings still laces with tongue action filmic. Resist metaphoric consistency, lest it hook you between readings. The hermeneut's request spaces the forces, pushing from the other side. Traumatophilia motivates the bolder inner Johnny Appleseeds. Biodiversity takes root, psychodynamically embracing alien ways. I can't think these things without prosthetic pathetics. The uncertainty principle is nature protecting itself against phallic mind. I embrace the irreducibly other and subvert gendering historics. On the other hand, I am not the authority on this page. If there are gods on this planet, bird feathers, big beaks, songs, signing are their play. Sexual haptics heals the wounds of desire. So there's a poetics to come.
On the other hand, I am not the authority on this page. Right? That's a very interesting line in context of the preverbs.
Yeah, well, I'm not the authority on the poem at all. And I've even said that in certain prose contexts, and that I don't have the authority to say that your reading is wrong. If you wrote something about poems, I mean, you were talking about this book that Bert Kimmelman has edited called Zero Point Poesis, about my work in general, which is mostly about the preverbs, but it also has to do with the sculptural work and
axial art,
yeah, axial sculpture, axial drawing, all these things, other things that I do. Axial music is not discussed in the book, but it's one of them. And in that book, I went through it, critically, the essays, to make sure there were not mistakes, and there were often mistakes made in quoting the line correctly, or in make sure that the basic information is right. But I always had to respect the view of the writer and not change what they said or how they understood the poem. And I found that I learned things about the work from reading what other people wrote. And working with you has been very exciting in that way, because I've never read the poems aloud with anything like the intensity and consistency with which we've done it over the last 5 years. And it's an amazing experience for me. It's brought a great deal of new understanding to me about the work.
Oh, it's been definitely an excellent collaboration that way, and very fruitful so far, so good.
20, gender dynamic. Poetry is language willing to get excited, not knowing what it is. In the divine moment, the mirror looks the other way. Only the things never thought can reach us at this distance. Fixtures of body are depressions of form. Mirror art is less and less reliable. Only where spooked, it reflects further. The poem keeps turning away from itself to escape conditions. Pronouns are drifting, feeling unwanted. When I see myself clearly, I'm the echo of my poems. Contradictions come to light like moths. Disappearing shadows guide my reading. Body patterns depress. Known beauty is parasitic. Buddhas teach nothing. It's tomorrow all around the poem where I hides from aggression. There's discursive hope in confusing pronouns. You answer my burning question, and I cool down inside. She answers, I heat. The attitude producing the question ignites. Mystical union gives off interpronominal pulsation.
The next thing I want to, hoping this kind of can kind of lead into, is that one thing I've never really talked with you about is the actual writing process. Mm-hmm. And I hate to ask just like a simple, silly question, but what is that writing process like for you? I mean, in writing the pre-verse, because do you just sit down and the lines flow out, or the one word comes or three words come, and then you go and the mind goes in a different direction? I mean, I'm kind of curious to know how the pre-verb process works in composition.
Right. Well, that's a very interesting question, and one that can't be answered simply, but I will give a brief answer, nothing like a complete answer. First thing I have to say is I write in a notebook. I would say about a third to half of the lines in any given poem within these series of poems has been written at odd times during the day. Not necessarily, I write them every day. I carry a notebook with me. I get nervous if I don't have a pen and notebook or paper near me at any given time, because when they come, I have what I consider to be about 30 seconds to get it down on the page. And if I get distracted and I'm in a bad situation where I can't write it down, I think I'll remember this. This is so strong. This line is so strong in my mind. But I almost inevitably forget it. So I have to write it down. And if I do forget it, I'll spend a lot of time during the day trying to remember it. It's almost, I find myself almost grieving for the loss of the line. It's become so part of my, I should say that this project's been going on for 20 years, this particular project. And I'm just in the process right now, I'm probably about five poems from the end of the 13th book of Pre-Verbs, of which six have been published, and a seventh one is about to come out. And so what happens is I write these things during the day, and I have many notebooks filled with them. And then I work basically usually at night and in the final composition. So after Susan has gone to bed and I take a little nap, I go to work, usually late at night, 11 or 12 at night I start. And I'm up till 2, 3, 4 in the morning, depending on how long the process takes. And when I go to my computer, I sit before the poems and I read the one from the day before or 2 days before. I, over these 20 years, for the last 10 years, I'd say, I probably worked almost every single day on these. Mm. And I mean, there are gaps, obviously, but for one reason or another. But then I'm now trying to slow the process down. I have the opposite problem from what people think of writers, is that I try to interfere with doing it every day now to give myself a break. But when I go down there, I sit in front of the poem, and I start to go through the poem from the day before, and suddenly something will start. And I won't know the title. Sometimes I don't know the title to the end of the poem. Sometimes it comes first. Sometimes it comes in the middle of the poem. So it starts. And then I'm going through my notebook and checking the things that I've written. And they will, in no particular order, speak to the poem as taking that place in the poem. I've had even the odd experience of putting a line in the middle of a page because I didn't think it was a line that would come first. And sometimes the lines come up to that point and leave it there and go past it then. Sometimes the line moves. So there's no way of saying this. It's that the poem takes on a life of its own and begins generating new lines. Mm. Now, for the last 2.5 or so years, I've changed the way that I work. I've been working with Susan in a collaboration, Susan Quasha in a collaboration. And she does photographic art, and she sends me a poem each day.
A photo.
Huh?
She sends you a photo.
Well, in a certain sense, she sends me the poem.
Because right.
She sends me a photo each day, or sometimes now she's sending me a few for a few days. But I try to take them in the order that she gives them to me. And I virtually never refuse the poem. If she sends me three, I might be tempted if I don't get the right vibe at the beginning to look at the next one. But basically, I take what I'm given. And I have that open on one screen, and I'm writing on another screen. And the poem will start, but it will be influenced by the drawing, the photograph. And it's hard to say how it's influenced, but it becomes a presence, like almost like a person in the room with me, talking to me. Hmm. And as I'm listening to it, I'm seeing through her eyes on one hand and seeing through the poem's eyes on another hand. And I feel like a neutral personality in the middle. And I'm negotiating simply the vibe that brings the thing to bear. And it's hard to say this, but sometimes the photograph will actually determine the rhythm of the language in the line, which is a very strange experience, because there's no easy way to say why or how such a thing would happen, but it does. And it won't usually do anything that even remotely is descriptive of the photograph, but something like an embodiment of a particular way of looking at that moment will condition very strongly what the line is. But then many of those lines come, either they were written that day, or I actually had the experience the other night of drawing from a notebook written in 2013 for two of the lines of the poem. I don't know why it happened, but I felt myself reaching for that notebook and opening it to a certain place and finding the perfect line for that place. And this will sometimes happen quickly. And sometimes there'll be long gaps. I'll just be there. Usually I'm listening to raga music, because raga music, for me, Indian raga music in the background kind of sustains my mood and my attention without my having to listen to it, as if I were listening to music. I'm almost listening inside music, listening inside her photograph, right, and inside the poem. Right. And this creates a very particular conjunction of energy that somehow frees me of any decision making in the ordinary sense. It's more like discrimination of a certain feeling tone as to whether this is right. I'm not sure that makes sense to anybody but me, but it's
not your ordinary kind of ekphrasis, let's put it that way.
34. Scrupulous erasers. Epigraph. In dreams, engines return abilities. Antonymous, the particular. Histories talk haltingly, like dreams don't end. They go home. Too much money is rephrasing. And dreams talk too much. A syntactic call to arms, lips. The cloud and I see eye to eye. In the lingual wild, word orders quicksand. I reverie a distant too young to mother mother teaching a poetics of miracularity. She gives birth to freshly unpreparing the mind. Or it's only a dream, erasing scream, yet the Turkish rug sees you seeing. Alternatively, art lives literally. Trip over a stone, knowing is teaching me trust. Poetry is the bottom falling out from above, as high as you get. Lies are the parts of the truth useful in blocking the unwelcomed. Consensus has practical value and mental hazard, as dowsers doubtless confirm. Playing stops playing upon deciding. We haven't advanced one bit. Beauty's unthought. Oniric gates leave you standing out. No one believes when you say what you mean. The syntax traps the gate open. There's very little sense of, I've never been a big pro craft kind of person. I'm extremely precise about the dynamic of the language, the syntax, the word choice and all of that, but not according to a craft, more according to, like, you're talking to somebody and you want to use a word that is appropriate so that the person isn't hurt or they aren't misguided. So you allow language to tell you appropriateness. Appropriateness is totally important, but it's very, very context specific. Yeah. And in my composition, it's an altered state of awareness, I put it that way. 24, a vortex past already. Thinking the truth of a line gazes into your image in the pond. Poem in itself pushes the conclusion that interpretation is a cheap thrill. This thought is likewise thrilling ass backwards. If the page narrows, I get claustrophobic, like my brother's pillow smothering me. When it gets personal, I feel the marketplace is nigh. There are 64 rhetorics in a deck of cards hungry to tell your fortune. Art has a cost that can't be expressed in price. Secret signs exist to remind the undecidable everywhere is sustainable. Reading real is making meaning instantly, no looking back. I'm only half conscious here, and that half is half falling on its face. How many halves make a whole? Thinking I know it is thinking it's me. Referential mania bathes in the cold light of concretely expressing stars. Still, there's a refusenik in the heart of every bright thought. Poetry has long loved agony, hence the impossible language for impossible things. Primordially, the wish is, take me at my word. Still planning on the pronoun fast for slimming down in ego land. The desire for a stable center swaps out for a centering swirl. Poetry is training for the great escape reshape.
One of the interesting things to me is even in this process that you're describing, today when you're reading, you're saying, this is a difficult section to read, uh-huh. right? And if you look at the poems, some of them have short lines, some of them have very long lines, and that there's a lot of variability in the poems and in the lines.
Yeah.
So the same process yields or results in different, you know, such different, I mean, ways of composition.
Yeah.
And it's not simply wordplay that we're dealing with here, you know, but when you're talking about the difficulties of reading, while that's part of it, the language is more technical here than it is here.
Yeah. It's more, when I say difficult, it's because the variation in rhythmic presentation from line to line is so extreme.
Yeah.
There's no, a poet tends to get into, most kinds of poetry get into some kind of a mode. It'll, if it's formal, it could be iambic pentameter and 14 lines or whatever. Or if it's free verse, it nevertheless has a kind of tonal sameness, something that guides it in its mode, its mood. I break that. For me, every line has independent force. And I want a person to, this is why it's called Zero Point Poesis, the title of that book, is that I want a person to go back to zero point at the beginning of each line and not be carried along by momentum. Because momentum sustains habits of reading and habits of thinking and habits of being. And I'm interested in creating an atmosphere in which all of that comes fresh, comes new. And that can be very challenging because we want momentum. It keeps us feeling okay in the way that our procedures go. But I actually keep that interruptive so that a person has to be more awake from line to line.
Right. That's more touching in base with the proverb notion, but not certainly in the dogmatic sense of proverbs.
Well, see, the difference between a preverb and a proverb is that a proverb claims to be telling you a truth.
No, yeah, I get, you know, I understand
the
difference.
And a preverb is pre-truth. So it's the state that leads to the sense of speaking truly or thinking truly. It's not the truth itself. It's the state in which we produce new awareness that feels self-true to us. And I want to awaken that in the reader's mind. I want to awaken that freshness of possibility in each moment of thinking, being, seeing.
Yeah.
Five, mirroring talks. Time to mumble in symbols, facing. Self-saying says, respect her to reflect her. The dangling modifiers keep life sexy. The poem knows when you're only naked above the eyebrows. Selves, slaves, lives, loves never resolve nor remove themselves. Lullaby of birdland sings sexual oology for eggheads. I other my mind to take it into itself. I talk Dakini to arouse my feminine to the courage of its knowing. I'm believing in her as my mirrored selfhood believes in me. Socio-whirling wises, how I finger you imprints and singles you. Claim every moment empty and see where it gets you, know-how. Mirroring talks back when you're not looking. I don't love my image, but respect its attachment to me. I reflect better on you, twice told. We'll never think our way through this mess. I have limited appreciation due to the imperfection of the actual path. Time is a perspective. It wouldn't stop even for Jesus. I'm forgetting how to write, which feels weirder than anything. Last night I dreamt the men who move on and leave us to obliviate. We're here for the sound being words. Sound being words.
Yeah. You know, last time we talked about preverbs, the last time you were on the program, you know, we were referred to the idea that, you know, I think I said something like, oh, these are about time. And you were saying, oh, yes, that's for sure. But I'm wondering, in the zero point, you know, poesis, you know, that's kind of like stopping and starting time in a certain way.
It sounds like that, but it's, well, you pause time. In the normal sense. But what I would say is that one reaches outside time. When you're thinking in the moment, but suddenly things come to mind. And where do they come from? Well, they don't come from just the ordinary sense of now. They come from the resources of our mind, of our being, of our life, which has a memory component. And memory is a very complex phenomenon in that sense. So I would say that temporality and atemporality are both at play inside the moment. Art superimposes time on atemporality, on non-time. You know, when you're in a book, reading a book in a story, you're taken away, you're taken into a narrative. You could be in something like vast time or very intimate time. And I want that phenomenon to become a matter of conscious awareness in the moment.
Right. Well, I'm going to again refer to a line that I heard you read from Every Sound Its Word today, which is no time to lose, no time to lose, no time. You know, and there's a different, and this is an interesting line because, you know, occasionally you use italics and poets will do that for emphasis. But normally you have emphasis without the italics, but in here it was like, no time to lose.
8. The art is taking the bad out of bad. Cruel coercion makes you wait to know. You're born abused. A title is even less serious about itself than a line. Poetry holds truth at arm's length down to a pinpoint pinprick. Free being centers out, intransitively eviscerating well-meaning. Quote, the more human is only truly visible in the post-human perspective, unquote. A line is an originating vehicle. Come back, it calls, to whatever you're becoming. It makes no claim to keep up with the finish line. A poem knows you're only halfway there. No sense pretending. A thing has the referent it predicts. Quote, any being encounters itself through you. How else do you exist? Unquote. I keep being reminded the penmanship is sinking. Between breaths is the incredible, invisible, shrinking line. Feel the gap. There's accuracy in truly evading. Quote, I got my sight specificity in the bargain basement, unquote, says no one and me. Poetry is language knowing who it is, where it stands. Even if an angel speaks to you, it's a take it or leave it situation. Crossing out spaces, centering. These are not special effects. A word spoken true never gives up its silence. And I would say that that last no time is also no time. Like, no time is almost like a time. It's another kind, it's an other time. It's an atemporal time. We're in no time, not just no time.
I get that.
We're in no time. And I played with the notion of no time as a state, as a condition, as a place that we draw from. It's another name for atemporality.
Right, right. Well, let's thanks so much for your input to these, curiosity here. Let me remind listeners who are listening, George Quasha is my guest here on the Poet Radio. Today, in addition to conversation, you've been hearing selections of recordings George and I made last summer and this month from one of his books of pre-verbs, Not Even Rabbits Go Down This Hole. Specifically, the first two sections of the book, Alternate Lingualities and Every Sound Its Word. The show began with a recording of snippets from earlier sessions in which George's notions of what poetry is are partially compiled. And George, we've referred to this new book that's coming out sometime soon, and Zero Point Poesis from Aporia.
Okay, well, I have two books coming up. One is the Bert Kimmelman's book about my work called Zero Point Poesis. That's being published, a new imprint under Marsh Hawk Press. And it has 17 essays in it, counting the long introduction by Jerome McGann. And it has, I think there are 12 different authors of these essays. A couple of authors have two essays. And the other book that's coming out is the next book of pre-verbs from Station Hill Press, and that's called Waking from Myself. And that will be the seventh book of pre-verbs. The one you've just been referring to is Not Even Rabbits Go Down This Hole.
Yes.
Which was published by Spite and Dival.
Right. Well, I learned so much. I took a look at the proofs for the Zero Point Poesis, and there's so much in there that Kimmelman has written a very biographical introduction to this. So you taught poetry on boats. That was in your past. That was pretty interesting to hear. Not many people can say that, I would say. you spent an afternoon with Samuel Beckett. You knew Aeneas Nin. I mean, who knew that, that you had these experiences. I personally was also interested to hear that you, earlier on, you made a lot of recordings. You used to record poetry readings whatnot, which is, I mean, does that, all that stuff still exist, all that material?
Oh, yeah. I have a large archive of, it's not very well organized, so calling it an archive is a bit extreme, but... No, I was very taken by Paul Blackburn, the poet Paul Blackburn, who used to lug around a huge tape recorder everywhere. And he was like a heroic recorder of the poetry of his time. And I think he really was an amazing figure in this whole preservation of poetry, oral poetry. You're doing something very, very similar. I was impressed by that, and I just started doing it. I made a trip to Europe. I got the state to give me, when I was teaching at Stony Brook, I got the state to give me a grant to go to Europe, and I recorded a lot of authors. And that was the summer that I got in touch with Samuel Beckett, and he spent an afternoon with me. But I did not record him because I knew he didn't like it. I mean, I'd heard that he didn't like it, so I just wanted to meet him. But I recorded great many people on reel-to-reel. They're part of a collection in Stony Brook now that's still there.
Oh, great.
And then years later, I just continued. Whenever I went to a poetry reading, I would record it just on a cassette player or whatever I had. And then I started the project Art Is, Poetry Is, Music Is. And I recorded on video, face-to-face, asking the question, what do you say art is, or what do you say poetry is if you're a poet, or what do you say music is? And I recorded over 1,000 poets, painters, or artists, and musicians in 11 countries.
Yeah.
Over a 20-year period.
and listeners to this program should go to find George's Vimeo page, which has
have a special website for it. It's art-is-international.org.
Oh, okay.
It's just to that project.
And I know Blackburn's recordings have been preserved, and some of them are online at the University of California, San Diego,
right.
As well.
Right.
So,
and now you have Penn Sound, which you're one of the major contributors to.
Yeah. It's good that we can do this, and we have the privilege to, to preserve and whatnot. Well, George, thanks so much, and our project will continue, and listeners should stay tuned to more of these pre-verbs by Penn Sound.
Thank you. So I'm reading the second series from the book, Not Even Rabbits Go Down This Hole. The book was published in 2020 by Spite and Dival. The series is called Every Sound Its Word. And there's a kind of epigraph that says, leave out this line and you leave out life itself. All is chaos again. William Blake. 1. Finding a world means liking it in here. Begin poem, begins the poem, when you can only write what you write. One idiolect after another, line after line, talking their way through. I can only write a life, whatever the obsessing subject. Declaringly, my life has always been perfect, that no other version serves the same. A hard text weaves its way through my soft spots. You can never make peace with contraries. Leaves meaning saved in the nick. A man poet is who calls she, pulling happiness from the cracks. No stopping the world giving birth to itself, herself saying. Thinking's any possible thought moving on. Getting situated as if veiled has its way with words. Agenda goes gender neutral, except she's still felt as I act. In the undreamt wild of language, word orders quicksand. I saw it written on the wall that made me think, writing on the wall. On the big page, you read whole-bodied, and time experiences what's never felt. Any pain teaches its elusive release self-secret. Being really in my body makes me wonder, who's really in the language? A word feels pain saying it. The truer it feels, the newer it wills. It says me saying it, because I work here too. It can't be said enough ways to be said wholly. A self-true fool has no choice but to persist in folly. Two, news from deep space none. Not I, nor the mode that blows through me. Mystery is that a swirl is always this swirl. The unit is not the line, it's the mind in play here. Can't think what I now think means I might be thinking for real. The newer it feels, the truer it wills. Leaving should at home's a must. The sequence thought is telling, therefore, the great interest and futility. Truth spoken shames to be. A line rides on the same to change in appearance. I forgot the line, eternity escaped. Demonstrably monstrous, cracking open, remembers. Garuda egg, awareness, it thinks me that. People cage and hate cages at once. A poem, a cabin, a hideout, holding in, hidden hut, homeless break. It's hard to find a place in this house to lie down. Eternity, the escape artist itself, traps in remembering. I'm skeptical of my skepticism, that it hide believing it formulates truth. The unit's not the line felt now, but the mind that gets the girl. Code for swirl. I see the size of the unfound words, the number, the smell, the feel, but not meaning. Self redeems in the writing unknowing and the natural otherwise. Poem stops when you begin to write what you should. Danger. Three, every sound its word. So you never heard of the dragon Dakini. Clearly your myth is holding back. Don't think you know what I'm doing, she said. If I knew, I'd tell you straight. Straight enough for me, I said. Makes my tongue curl. The modality sans modus comes to mind.